the Russians had not learned from the history of Afghanistan, and they thought that by occupying Afghanistan, they would be able to achieve their goals in the rest of the world. They invaded our country with more than 100,000 military troops in 1979. I'm going to that time because that was the beginning of the tragedy in Afghanistan. Whatever is happening now, including the bombing, including the 11th September incident, is a direct consequence of the Russian invasion.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show for Sunday, November 25th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this one-hour examination of the news and events not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, a report on Buy Nothing Day as holiday shoppers are confronted with street theater in downtown Santa Cruz. Then Freak Radio's The Fish speaks with Diane Patterson and Kelly about the struggle at Big Mountain. And later, we'll hear a talk by Tamina Farial of RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, who spoke under tight security recently at UC Santa Cruz, plus this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next.
Buying nothing. Yes, I know you can do it. You can feel the spirit. Just reach deep down inside of yourself and find your creativity.
What do we want?
Shopping!
When do we want it?
Now!
Traditionally, the day after Thanksgiving is the official start of the holiday season and the biggest shopping day of the year. But for some, it is known as International Buy Nothing Day, a time to reflect on how much of the world's resources are consumed by North Americans. Each day, the average North American produces about 3.5 pounds of garbage as a result of needless purchasing. Buy Nothing Day began in Vancouver, Canada in 1992 and is the brainchild of Ted Dave, a graphic designer working in advertising. Since then, the idea of a consumer boycott has spread and is celebrated with actions in more than 30 countries. In Santa Cruz on November 23rd, about a dozen people gathered to take the Buy Nothing message to the shoppers of Pacific Avenue.
Today we're going to be protesting on the mall in favor of Buy Nothing Day. This is an international campaign supported by Adbusters, and it highlights the insanity of the overconsumption of Western industrialized civilization. And just giving people a chance to think about what they're doing instead of just following a standard Pavlovian response to the day after Thanksgiving and jumping into the stores with their credit cards and getting in lines. I mean, United We Stand, we were thinking United We Stand in line to shop is not gonna save us. It's not gonna save us from the terrorists. It's really only gonna put us further in debt and continue the pattern of the Western industrialized society being overconsumptive and leaving very little for the rest of the world to survive on.
Paul Franklin is with Art and Revolution, a collective of artists and activists who revitalize political protest with dance, music, comedy, street theater, and education.
The old style of protesting from the 60s of just chanting and marching down the street with banners, you know, it has a certain amount of effectiveness, but that's limited. And so the idea behind Art and Revolution is to become more creative and to incorporate puppets.
For Buy Nothing Day, the group brought out its 10-foot-tall corporate monster puppet, which was paraded around by Laura.
Well, this puppet is a corporate monster. It was made with an aluminum backpack frame that's been screwed together to some 2x2s, and it's got a post that's nailed in the middle of the frame that goes really tall, and the head is made out of paper mache, and it's got a tube, like a poster tube, inside the head that sticks on that post that's in the middle. It represents multinational corporations. It's big and large, just like they are. It's really strong. and it's got hands that will just grab you and suck you in.
In addition to puppets, Art and Revolution is known for its raucous street theater, as demonstrated by many of the participants. They wore costumes such as a credit card, a businessman, and a reverend, while others handed out literature and gift exemption vouchers.
This is a wage slave MasterCard for Buy Nothing Day. If you're a wage slave, like most of us, and you're forced to buy things, your groceries, on MasterCard, then of course you end up paying a high percent and being able to buy less and less all the time.
It's Buy Nothing Day, and this is a Christmas gift exemption voucher certifying that you are exempt from the exchange of Christmas gifts, well, with whoever you choose. You could write in here, all my friends, or you could give them out to people individually. No guilt, no obligation, no shopping, no consuming. Some people are saying United We Spend, or some of them I think say United We Stand in Line. But I can't see how buying consumer goods that especially were made with sweatshop labor, how that can be a kind and generous thing to do this season. So if you would like, you can be exempt from all of that.
The group marched around the downtown shopping corridor, stopping for performances in front of corporate chains like Borders Books, Starbucks, and Gap.
I just want to say that I know that today's International Buy Nothing Day, it's the one day out of the year that I should be spending with my family and my friends and just giving some love and some time and attention, but I just feel like I have to shop! We are here in front of the Gap, the bastion of free liberty, where they pay the women 16 cents an hour. That's $1.50 to make that sweatshirt. But I get to buy it for $40! And that's capitalism pure and simple, and I love it. But I'm just having a problem. I'm not sure if I should buy red or gray. So I'm out here on International Buy Nothing Day trying to spend some time with my friends instead of buying stuff one day out of the year. But I just got to shop! And I was hoping that maybe there would be a 12-step program to get me to stop buying crap at the crap store. Oh, Gap store, sorry.
Groucho Monarch is a co-founder of Santa Cruz Art and Revolution.
It's a day to spend time with your family, a day to spend time with your friends, and a day just to take a breather from consuming and buying stuff. And just notice that there are other things we can do with our lives besides working really hard so that we can get money, so that we can fill corporate coffers with more cash.
The Buy Nothing spectacle on the sidewalks of Santa Cruz attracted little police attention, but curious onlookers were plenty.
Oh, I think you're great. I agree with you.
Are you down? What are you doing down here on Pacific Avenue today?
Just watching the Art and Revolution. Loving it.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful because what can we do but laugh? You know, laugh at the ridiculousness of, you know, shop until you drop, so we can buy more and more bombs to bomb women and children and men.
When you go shopping, they want you to spin, 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 and then half the stuff don't fit you anyway. When you bring it back, they don't want to take it, give you your money back. I think we need to get more food for the people that are homeless, build some housing so all of us can afford to live here. I grew up here since the 60s. I feel like a damn tourist here. This scares me. Half the people don't even know you. You can't go around like you used to and be able to work and cut lawns and get food. It's very scary to live in Santa Cruz nowadays.
What brought you downtown today?
Well, what brought me downtown today is all my kids. I work with a lot of kids, and I wanted them to see what really goes on when it comes holiday time. People flip out, prices jump up, people get very rude, evil, and I want these kids to see what really happens.
What do you think of the demonstration here today?
Demonstration is what we need. People need to open their eyes up and see what's really going on. They keep it hush-hush. You don't see it on the TV. It's spin, 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 buy, buy, buy. It's okay to go broke, but we can't help you the next day when you have no money and need some food.
I like it. I think it's necessary, and it calls attention to things that we need to be paying attention to.
Everywhere, just one store.
That's my favorite.
For more information about Buy Nothing Day, check out Adbusters at www.adbusters.org. Or for more information about Art and Revolution, visit www.artandrevolution.org. This is the V-Man reporting for Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Black Mesa is not black, and it is not a mesa. It is 4,000 square miles of ginger-colored plateau land in northern Arizona, a distinct elevated landmass the shape of a bear's paw. On a map, the Black Mesa coal field looks like an ink blot on a Rorschach test, following the contours of the Pleistocene Lake it once was. Over thousands of years, the vigorous forests and plant life embraced by the lake decayed into a bog, which in turn hardened the coal, some 21 billion tons of coal, the largest coal deposit in the United States. Until 1969, the coal lay untouched and so close to the surface that the walls of the dry washes glistened with seams of shiny black. With a long-term value estimated as high as $100 billion, it lies completely under Indian reservation lands, for Black Mesa is also home to some 16,000 Navajo and 8,000 Hopi. In 1966, the Hopi and Navajo tribal councils, not to be confused with the general tribal population, signed strip mining leases with a consortium of 20 utilities that had designed a new coal-fired energy grid for the urban Southwest. Under the umbrella name Western Energy Supply and Transmission, or WEST, the utilities promised more air conditioning for Los Angeles, more neon lights for Las Vegas, more water for Phoenix, more power for Tucson, and for the Indians, great wealth. Today, some 30 years after the strip mining for coal began, the cities have the energy they were promised, but the Hopi and Navajo nations are not rich. That part of the plan proved ephemeral. Instead, Black Mesa has suffered human rights abuses and ecological devastation. The Hopi water supply is drying up, thousands of archaeological sites have been destroyed, and unbeknownst to most Americans, 12,000 Navajo have been removed from their lands, the largest removal of Indians in the United States since the 1880s. And so begins the article, The Black Mesa Syndrome, Indian Lands, Black Gold, written by Judith Knees. It can be read in its entirety on the website of the Black Mesa Indigenous Support Network, www.blackmesais.org. The article highlights the history of coal mining on these indigenous lands. This week, as most Americans celebrated Thanksgiving, the stories of this land's original inhabitants are often forgotten. Folk musician Diane Patterson and her partner Kelly have been advocating and supporting the resistors at Big Mountain. Just before the holiday, they dropped in on the fish to discuss their tour. We begin with Kelly, who reads a statement from Leonard Benali, and then Diane debuts her latest song for our listeners.
Basically, we've been on tour, on the Standing Together with the Dine tour this fall, and we've been raising money and awareness for the 12th annual Thanksgiving Food and Supply Run out to our Native American sisters and brothers, the Dine, or Navajo as the Spanish called them, out at the Four Corners, northeast Arizona at Big Mountain. These folks are sitting on the largest coal deposit in the continent, and for 32 years now they've been trying to remove them from the land so that they can take the coal. And we spend all year doing eyewitness education, sharing with different communities about what's going on out there. And in the fall, we're gearing up to make a run to the land. There's food purchases being made in Flagstaff, and last year 100 families were served by the food run. And what I have here is a statement by Leonard Benali, who is the son of Alice Benali, who was a longtime elder resistor at Big Mountain, who passed away a few years ago. And he's out there, and his sister and his brother, Louise and John, and they're resisting. They're staying in their hogans and herding their sheep and raising their children and dealing with the authorities out there. And he's got a statement, and we've brought it out here to share with the public what the people at Big Mountain, the Dine, are saying. And it goes, to Indigenous brothers and sisters, we wish to say our words once again, that today, here in our own country, so-called America, we, the first patriots and the last citizens of our own country, it's been like that for 500 years. Indigenous people living in silence and dying in silence on their own ancestral land throughout the Western Hemisphere. Today we are just a handful here and there throughout the Western Hemisphere, and there could have been millions of us today, but we were raped, murdered, massacred, persecuted, and prosecuted for our own belief, so-called religion. Today, we're still living like that at a place called Big Mountain, where indigenous people are still in existence through their ways of life, ceremonialism, and our language, which is still intact, and our traditions and our culture, which is strong. This is where old people still communicate with the natural world, and our own language gives us different world view. Even just recently, it was recognized by the United States government how our language helped them defeat the Japanese during World War II. But today, we are all segregated from the outside world. We are isolated, where our food and water are still being denied. This is here, inside America, and even Afghanistan, where indigenous people are being bombed. We know that there is no democracy, and some of the American people say it is so great and whatever, but as you know, the president was selected by the Supreme Court justices, not elected. Here inside America, indigenous people of Big Mountain are still being denied their right to live in the so-called free world. But as we ask for your support, indigenous brothers and sisters and all other concerned people, hear our words. Please pray for the people out at Big Mountain, young people, elderly, and generations to come. We know it is hard to be an Indian nowadays in America. It is a terrible time to be a Diné person, especially if you live in Big Mountain. We are the most oppressed people in all of America. We know that a lot of other people here, too, in our country, Indian country, millions of others struggling for the same demands, democracy and justice. We have already foreseen what was coming in the prophecy and what is happening today here in the world. This is all in our prophecy, Diné and Hopi, where man is going to make war and destroy himself for greed. Today, man is not only hurting people, but corporations are raping Mother Earth. Yes, even our own brothers, the Hopi Tribal Council people, are doing terrorist acts, coming in with political police and a political force. It's all about militarism and the system, the arbitrary system that people are so into. It's going to lead everybody to their doomsday. There's no peace, and whatever peace for them is always war. Today, peace means dropping bombs. We can achieve liberty by shouting out at the government. It's not only the mouth of the gun that can achieve liberty. In solidarity with all indigenous people fighting for their culture and traditional ways, indigenous people fighting throughout the Western Hemisphere, salute and all for now. Leonard Benali, Big Mountain Resistor.
What do you guys know about the situation down there? I know you're going to be on your way fairly soon with the supply run and whatnot. Have you received any other updates other than that letter from Leonard? Or
this is one of the latest, October 8th. Yeah, they did have some trouble this summer with, there was an effort to stop the Sundance ceremony at Camp Anime, and they actually arrested the grandmothers, but the ceremony and the prayers were made. They decided to go ahead and bring in the Tree of Life and put it in the center of the Sundance Arbor, and the dancing, the prayers were all made. Even though they did turn off the water for 4 days, and they turned away people who had come to pray.
Wait, they turned off the water in the desert for 4 days.
The only water that the people have access to, they turned it off. Many of them have to drive to pumps that have been designated for them to get water, because everything else has been dried up. They use 3 million gallons of water a day to slurry the coal from Black Mesa to the Mojave Generating Station, 273 miles away.
Wow.
So the prayers were made. However, on August 17th, they came back to Camp Anime. That would be the Hopi Tribal Council, Hopi Rangers. And they took bulldozers and chainsaws. They took down the Sundance Arbor and took the Tree of Life that had hundreds of prayer flags and had started budding and put it into a chipper. And this happened not too long ago. The people cannot fix their hogans, which are their traditional homes, their eight-sided homes, round homes, dirt floors. They're confiscating sheep and requiring the people to go into town and pay fines in order to get their sheep back. And what we're dealing with here is just a few people who are left out there. They've already relocated 12,000 people. This is a 32-year-old issue. And we're working with people who consider themselves traditionals. They wish to sustain their ancient ways of prayer and connection with the earth. They also believe they've been placed in that area to guard the mother's liver, which is the coal. And Roberta Blackgoat says the Mother Earth is dying and she can't live without her liver.
Yeah.
Because the Mother Earth cannot live without her liver. So in April, we did have the honor and the blessing to join the delegation in New York City at the Three World Financial Center, where we went in ceremony and peace to try to get meetings with the CEOs and the shareholders of the Lehman Brothers, the multinational corporation that owns Peabody Coal Mine, who's out at Big Mountain. And those meetings were, they got three meetings. They went all the way to New York City not knowing if they'd get any, and they got three meetings. The people and the corporations were very respectful, and we were also very respectful, which was in very subtle, ethereal ways. There were tremendous success. People in the meetings were grabbing their hearts and chests and talking about the compassion and starting to feel something. However, they made no promises to stop the destruction. There was a Hopi man as a part of the delegation, as was said in Leonard's statement. What happened on September 11 has been written in many prophecies, including the Hopi prophecy. And when the delegation went to New York City, they told the people in charge, the people with the power and the money, that it is written that destruction will come if humankind does not turn its ways around. And this was not a personal threat. This was ancient wisdom. This was a prophecy. They didn't listen to this ancient wisdom. These people are uncolonized. These people still speak to Creator. They talk to the trees and to the rocks. You know, they went there to share that wisdom with the people in charge, and they didn't listen. And the building doesn't stand anymore where we went in prayer and ceremony and in peace. That building went down on September 11th. And we're all extremely sad about that tragedy. And in our work, we are sending a lot of energy and prayers to the people there who are suffering, as well as the people in Afghanistan and all over the world who are suffering because of corporate greed and violence and war and unconsciousness.
Did you ever wonder what happened to the old coal mines and to the mighty miners with their hard hats and their sooty faces? Oh, I've seen traces in the legends where they worked until they died, or they lived among the side effects of all the angry land that lay misplaced inside a man and grew a bigger rage than coal could ever power. Oh, but the coal mines look so different. It's all on the surface now. It's even bigger now somehow. And the mine I've seen can now be seen from space. Oh, what a disgrace they've made, these modern day coal mines. Or their ivory towers are getting richer by the hour. They're tearing up the land for coal power. And for the power we must pay, but some just piss it all away to light Las Vegas and a million LA billboards. giant piles all around, moving in tunnels on the ground. They slurry coal with water stolen from the people. Yes, there are people living out on a vast land. They build their homes with their own hands. They're making prayers for their dead. Some buy uranium mined there years ago. Where does the time go? And now it's coal the man is after, and the people forced to scatter to the four winds, some resisting relocation. They built a nation, call themselves the Dene people. They're herding sheep and weaving stories. They sing their songs around the ancient altar, the Dene altar. It's the land where they've lived for a thousand years, still giving up their blessings and their sun dance up on Big Mountain. And that's not counting the Anasazi there before them, their ancestors' dreams before them still live on, though the land is slowly dying. The earth is crying, say the elders on that land. They say the coal mine's greedy hand is stealing the water and the land from the people who were born there to guard it. And they'll guard it with their lives, planting the corn, how it still thrives. For all humanity, they pray up on Big Mountain. Up on Big Mountain. Ooh. Up on Big Mountain.
From the studios of Freak Radio, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're tuned to the Weekly Freak Show on Party Town Radio, webcasting to the world at www.partytown.com/radio. That was this week's Spotlight Sound, Diane Patterson debuting her latest song for Big Mountain live in the studio. Please have a pen and paper ready to take down our contact information at the end of this one-hour broadcast. The Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, or RAWA, is an independent, all-volunteer, non-violent organization that calls for multilateral disarmament and the establishment of a secular democracy in Afghanistan, where women may once again participate fully in public life. Since 1977, the women of RAWA have stood up to all native and foreign oppressors with courage and principle. They opposed the Russian occupation of Afghanistan, and today they oppose all Islamic fundamental forces, including both the Taliban and those in the Northern Alliance. RAWA condemned the September 11th attacks as a barbaric act of violence and terror, opposed a U.S. military attack that has killed thousands of innocent Afghans, and expressed its sincere hope that the American people can differentiate between the people of Afghanistan and a handful of fundamental terrorists. While the Taliban have outlawed education for women beyond the second grade and deny them the few social services that exist in Afghanistan, RAWA secretly and under the threat of death provides schooling for girls and boys, as well as medical care and adult education for women. In neighboring Pakistan, it provides Afghan refugees with aid, runs orphanages, and sponsors income-generating projects. Tamina Faryal is a representative of RAWA. Under heavy security, she has been touring the United States to raise awareness of the plight of Afghan women. She spoke at UC Santa Cruz on the night of November 6th, and now we'll hear her talk. Tamina Farial discusses the Russian occupation of her country, the oppression of women under Taliban rule, and the fundamentalism of the Northern Alliance.
This trip actually was organized by a group of our supporters, and that was months before the 11th September. But it just happened to be after 11th September, which indeed is the right time, as Afghanistan all of a sudden became the center of attention. I think that by now everyone has heard about Afghanistan and what is going on there. And whenever people hear about Afghanistan, the questions that come to their minds are, why all these tragedies and miseries? How did all these start? Whether what Taliban and other fundamentalists have been doing since 1992 are the representations of their culture, tradition, and religion. Why there is no resistance against all these barbarism? Whether the people accept this inhuman situation? As you know, Afghanistan has a very key position in Asia. It's called the heart of Asia. It's a crossroad in Central Asia, South Asia, and the Middle East. And because of that, its location throughout its more than 5,000 years history, it has been invaded by different countries from the different sides, from Alexander the Great to Genghis Khan to Mughals to British that invaded Afghanistan 3 times, and finally the Russians. The people of Afghanistan, although with empty hands, have always raised and fought and defeated the invaders. Unfortunately, the Russians had not learned from the history of Afghanistan, and they thought that by occupying Afghanistan, they would be able to achieve their goals in the rest of the world. They invaded our country with more than 100,000 military troops in 1979. I'm going to that time because that was the beginning of the tragedy in Afghanistan. Whatever is happening now, including the bombing, including the 11th September incident, is a direct consequence of the Russian invasion. Had they not invaded the country, the fundamentalists would not have been in power today in Afghanistan. Their occupation lasted in Afghanistan for 10 years. The people of Afghanistan, from the different corners and different sides, rose the very first days against them and took part in the resistance war. And as a result, we lost 2 million people, 1.5 million people became disabled, and more than 5 million people took refuge to many different countries, mainly in the two neighboring countries, Pakistan and Iran. While the Russians had their direct military invasion in Afghanistan, other countries such as Pakistan, Iran, Saudi Arabia, the United States, France, had indirectly their hands in Afghanistan in taking part in that Cold War. And that was by supporting, creating, and nurturing the most misogynist, anti-civilization, anti-democracy, dependent on foreign powers and terrorist groups named fundamentalists, which they had the nature that I mentioned from the very beginning. And our organization, in that beginning, had warned the countries that supported them that they're not only going to be a danger for the people of Afghanistan, for the whole region, but for the world. In fact, Rawa had anticipated the 11th September incident, that the nature that they had, they even did not care about the countries that once created and supported them. And when, in 1992, these fundamentalist groups, that was after the collapse of the puppet regime, took the power in Afghanistan, whatever we had anticipated happened on our country and people, on already tired and destroyed people and country. People of Afghanistan were fed up and tired with war after being engaged in war for 10 years with the Russians. And these fundamentalist groups, unfortunately, came under the name of Islamic Revolution and Muslims. The people of Afghanistan thought that they would be any better and would be able to establish peace and security in the country. But experiencing them for a few months was enough for people to know about their real nature. From the period between 1992 to 1996, the people of Afghanistan were witness of the unprecedented crimes that had never happened in the history of Afghanistan, and we believe in the modern history of the world. Their first and easy victims were women. Although, like Taliban, they did not have any official list of restrictions on women, but there were many cases of rape, suicide, forced marriages, and women's abduction. Even father killed their own daughters because they did not want them to be married to those fundamentalist commanders, as they knew what could happen to them. The women themselves committed suicide, again for the same reason. As a result of their internal fighting, since there were 8 parties that each and every one of them wanted to have the control of the Afghanistan, 70 to 80% of the capital city, Kabul, became totally destroyed. The hospitals, the museum, the schools were looted by these different groups. But what makes that time even more tragic is that government was recognized by the international community. It was considered as a legitimate government for the people of Afghanistan. And still, that is the recognized government of Afghanistan. And unfortunately, the media kept totally silent about that period. I'm sure that in this room, you all have heard about the Taliban. And most people maybe would think that the tragedy in Afghanistan began when the Taliban took the power in 1996. Well, that was not the beginning of the tragedy. The tragedy for women especially began when in 1992 these fundamentalists took the power. But because they were created by some certain countries, they obviously tried to keep silent and not reveal the crimes that they committed against humanity, let alone to condemn those crimes and atrocities. Well, the different countries realized that with those fundamentalists who were too involved in their own internal fightings, they were not able to maintain their interest in the region to Afghanistan. They had already thought of having another force for a rainy day. And that force, or what they call themselves movement, was Taliban's movement. Taliban, which means religious students, were created, supported, and raised in Pakistani religious schools. Most of them were orphans of the resistance war. They had lost either both parents or one of them. They were the poorest of the poor, that the families could not afford their shelter, their food, and clothing, and they preferred to send them to those religious schools called madrasas, without knowing that one day they are going to be terrorists. And in that very young age, they were brainwashed in many ways, but especially their behavior towards women, besides the fact that they were all boys and all the teachers were men, and they never had the experience of living in a normal family environment with the sisters or mothers or wives. That was the reason that when they took the power with such hatred, they imposed the restrictions on women. The Taliban emerged for the first time in Afghanistan in 1994, just in some southern parts. And they emerged overnight as an unknown group to the people of Afghanistan. In 1996, they took the control of the capital city, Kabul, and swiftly advanced and seized the control of the most parts of the country. One of the reasons that they could easily take the control of the other parts from the opposition groups or the other fundamentalist groups was because the people of Afghanistan were so fed up with the other groups, and they came under the name of establishing peace and stability in the country. And people of Afghanistan once again thought that they would be any better. When they took the control, for them nothing was left in the country to destroy. Instead, they imposed the restrictions not only on women, but many restrictions on men and many general restrictions in the society. No man can go outside under the Taliban without having a long beard. All men have to be dressed in traditional clothing. If men are dressed in Western clothing as they used to be dressed, especially in the main cities, they could be beaten up, they could be put into prison, or even could be killed for that. All men are ordered to pray 5 times a day in the mosques. If at that prescribed time of the pray, a man is found walking on the streets, he can be killed, he can be put into prison, he can be humiliated, insulted, and beaten up in public. This has not been mentioned anywhere in Quran, anywhere in Islam. This is not a practice in any Muslim country in the world. But Taliban do it under the name of Islam. Half of the population in Afghanistan are paralyzed in the society. They do not have the right to get any education. All educational institutes are called gateways to hell. They cannot work. While prior to the 1992, in the main cities in Afghanistan, we had 40% female doctors. We had 60% female teachers, including university teachers. More than half of the university students were women, and we had women's ministers. Women took part very actively in the society, and all of a sudden, they were ordered to stay at home and not to work. They have to be fully covered with burqa. They cannot wear shoes that would make noise or colorful clothing. They're even ordered to paint the windows dark so they could not be seen by the outside man. The general restrictions are photography, filming, music are banned. They even search people's houses for TV, VCR, or videotapes. And if they find any, they would hang them up on the trees, in the streets, to show to people that those are Satan boxes in equal to infidelity. The fact that Afghanistan has been in war for more than two decades, which as a result has lost its economic, political, and social infrastructure. It is now a country without any bank or communication system. It's a country that we do not have embassies, that we do not have offices, that we do not have schools and universities, and most of the hospitals functioning as they did before. It's not a normal country in this 21st century. So that fact, with all the restrictions imposed on the people of Afghanistan, especially on women, have driven majority of the population with the mental and psychological problems. According to a study by Physicians for Human Rights, 90% of Afghan women, especially in the urban areas, are with mental and psychological problems, especially those women who used to take part in the society before. And now they don't have any means to earn a living, especially those who have lost all their male breadwinners during the fightings, do not know what to do, how to survive, how to feed their children. Only in the capital city, Kabul, we have more than 70,000 widows. For most of them, no option is left but going to beggary and prostitution, or to commit suicide, or experience a gradual death. Many people, and especially widows, were witness of their children dying in front of their eyes. And I'm sure that nowadays there are millions of people who have to be witness of the starvation of their children or dying of their children and the rest of the family members. If tomorrow we have a stable and peaceful Afghanistan, it would not take us a very long time to rebuild the country, although we never can obtain the cultural values like the Buddha statues that were destroyed by the Taliban, but still we can rebuild our country. But it would definitely take us a very long time to rebuild the people the way that they have been affected mentally and psychologically as a result of more than two decades of war. And what makes this situation in Afghanistan even more tragic is it remained for years the largest forgotten tragedy in the world, according to Amnesty International. Had there was not the incident, the tragic incident of 11 September, until today there would not have been any attention towards that country and its suffering people. Unfortunately, it was just after the 11th September that the country started to take some practical steps towards eradicating terrorism and fundamentalism in Afghanistan. And that practical step is bombing Afghanistan, which is once again plunging the people of Afghanistan into a deeper misery. After the 11th September incident, we were witness of the hundreds and thousands of people leaving the country as they were afraid of being killed in the bombing, knowing that when they come to Pakistan or to Iran or other countries, neighboring countries, they would have nothing to live with or to survive with. The borders of all the neighboring countries in Afghanistan were closed the very first days, but the people still tried and still they're trying to come through the illegal ways to the mountains. Even there were many families who came halfway, especially families with the children, and went back because they could not make it to Pakistan. And they thought that they would definitely die on the mountains. And it's better to die in their countries, either from starvation or by being bombed. After 11th September, more than 100,000 refugees came to Pakistan. And when they come to Pakistan, they don't have any food, any shelter, any clothing, any medicine. Tony Blair, in one of his speeches, mentioned that the 11th September incident was an attack on the freedom of people in this country. It is never a question for these people. The people of Afghanistan, and thus their freedom, have been attacking for years by the same hands, those which were created by themselves. But there has never been any attention towards that, towards the miseries of the people of Afghanistan. Even the statues, the stones, got more attention than the miseries and the plight of Afghan women and people. 2 weeks before the destruction of the statues, right in the same province, there was a massacre of more than 300 innocent people by the Taliban, which never got any media coverage. Is it because people of Afghanistan deserve all those miseries and atrocities? Is it because the color of their blood is different from the people in other countries? We don't know why. Why the countries who are beating up the drum of human rights and democracy are so indifferent towards the people of Afghanistan and the miseries. And obviously, there are many more countries that they have been indifferent about their miseries. Another question that I mentioned, that usually people may ask, that whether there have been any resistance or not against all these miseries. We can say yes and no. No, because there has never been a resistance in the form to get rid of the fundamentalists and their masters who support and have created them from the political scene of Afghanistan. Because if people of Afghanistan during the other invaders, including the Russians, fought with empty hands, today they are with empty stomachs. The main concern for the majority of the population is how to fight for a piece of bread, how to survive for another day. It is really difficult to expect an uprising in the sense of rooting out these atrocities and criminals from the political scene of Afghanistan. Although we're hopeful that these people would definitely one day uprise against this inhuman situation. It is not possible to continue with this inhuman situation. People of Afghanistan already experience gradual death, and they would fight even with empty hands and empty stomachs, thinking that either they would win or they would die, and that would be better than a gradual death. But there have been resistance in many different forms, especially by women. According to Taliban's law, no woman is allowed to go outside on the street. But if you go to Afghanistan, you will find many women walking on the streets alone. According to Taliban, there is no education for women. But there are thousands of secret home-based classes run by women. Some of these classes were discovered. The teachers were put into prison. They were beaten up in front of the students. At least they were ordered not to run the classes. But the women did not give up. And today, the number is increasing in a rate that is out of the control of the Taliban. Or there have been cases that women have threw their burqas on the faces of the Taliban because they could not stand all those humiliation and insults. Sometimes some of these changes have been reported by Western media as a change in Taliban's mentality. They talk of moderate Taliban. This is not a change in Taliban's mentality, and it is really not possible to change that mentality. But this is resistance by the people of Afghanistan, and especially by the women in that country. But the most visible and mobilized form of resistance that I'm happy to talk about is the work, the existence, and the struggle of the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. It is, in fact, the oldest women's organization in Afghanistan, established in 1977, at a time that we did not have the Soviet invasion and neither the fundamentalists. It was founded by a woman named Mina, who was assassinated 10 years later by KGB agents with the help of one of the fundamentalist groups in Pakistan, thinking that with Mina's assassination, they would stop women's movement in Rawa in Afghanistan. But obviously they were wrong, because Rawa came into being based on a need, and other members with a stronger dedication and commitment continued what she had started. Rawa in the beginning was not a political organization. The main goal was to struggle and achieve women's rights in that male-dominated country. But after Russians' invasion, Rawa turned to a political organization, believing that until we do not have our national emancipation, we cannot claim only for women's emancipation. Everyone was in chain, and still is in chain in Afghanistan, not only women, but men, children, and everyone. And still, that is the main goal for Rawa. Rawa is for a society based on freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of beliefs, secular democracy, women's rights, and human rights. And that society is not possible to achieve with fundamentalists on power. So Rawa has been in a battle against first the Soviets and then the fundamentalists through whatever way it could and it can, mainly in exposing their crimes and nature and condemning them through whatever means it could, mainly through our demonstrations or our publications and website. In fact, Rawa has been the only Afghan women organization that dared to stage demonstrations in a very suffocating situation in Afghanistan during the Soviets and in Pakistan. It is the only women's organization in Afghanistan that dares to call itself not only political but also revolutionary, because we believe that in a country, in a very male-dominated and now fundamentalist-belated country, the existence of an organization like Rawa itself is revolution. Struggling for education in that country is revolution, let alone for women's rights or freedom and democracy, not to a secular democracy. Rawa also has been, since its inception, a humanitarian organization with many humanitarian projects. The main focus in that field of Rawa has been education for women and girls, as barely maybe 5 to 7% of women in Afghanistan would be able to read and write. And when I mentioned some of the statistics before about the doctors or teachers, that covered only the 15% of the population who lived in the urban areas. Most of the women in the rural areas still are not educated and they're not able to read and write. So as a women organization, in order to give awareness to these women, we have to start from the very basic level of education and literacy classes. And Rawa has been very successful in that regard. Rawa started with a few group of women, but today we have 2,000 core members in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. And many of these women joined us from the literacy classes, which now we are very much proud of having those members with us. They take part actively in all Rawa's activities, and they teach many other women and children in both countries. Rawa has income-generating projects which mainly serves women and widows who do not have any other option, as I mentioned before, just to enable them to run their own lives and not to go to those painful occupations. Rawa has many mobile health teams, as that is also one of the main problems for women and children and everyone in Afghanistan. People die of the very treatable diseases. A fever can kill a child or a woman or man in Afghanistan because there is no access to medicine, to doctor, or to hospital. Rawa used to have a hospital in one of the cities in Pakistan, usually giving medical treatments to 300 to 400 women and children, but it had to close it down because of financial problems, which we are hopeful to reopen that hospital again, thanks to our supporters, mainly in this country, who are trying very hard to raise the money to enable us to reopen the hospital. And the same projects are also carried on among refugees in Pakistan. I should mention that in both countries, we have to keep all of our activities in secret. In Afghanistan, because of that regime and all the restrictions and the fact that Rawa opposes them and exposes them and condemns them through its activities and the political feed. But in Pakistan, because of the government that has always been supportive towards the fundamentalists and now is the only government that has diplomatic relationship with Taliban, obviously we cannot hope to have open activities in that country. We're the oldest women organization in Afghanistan, but we do not have any office. We are even not a registered organization, and we cannot hope to because of the security problems, which obviously has made our work very much difficult. But through many different ways, we have managed to operate in both countries. One of main RAWA's activity inside Afghanistan, which again, we're very much alone in that, is to document the human rights violation by filming, taking photos, and making reports. You might have seen in the documentary Beneath the Veil, the execution scene of women, which was filmed by a team of RAWA members. And they knew that if they were arrested with that tape, they could have been executed right in the same stadium as that woman. But we want to let the outside world know of the real tragedies that women and people in Afghanistan have to go through. RAWA started its website in 1997, and it was only after that that we established connections with the outside world and contacts with hundreds of women's organizations and groups in different countries, as well as thousands of our supporters. Our website not only helped us in raising awareness or raising financial support for our projects, but also it has been very helpful to know that we are not alone in our struggle, that we have the support and sympathy and solidarity of women and people in general and the rest of the world. And we have examples of our many different supporters as individuals, as organizations and groups that have helped us and in fact have saved lives in Afghanistan, which I would wish I could name each and every one of them in this event, but unfortunately the time does not allow. But we have always been very grateful to all of them, to all of the great people all over the world which have been supportive towards the people of Afghanistan and especially their women. We do not confuse the governments with the people. And that is the message that we want to carry to the other people, and especially women that we work with, that they should not blame the people or confuse the people with their governments. If the government in this country has played its negative role towards Afghanistan since the Soviet invasion, the people has always been supportive and very great. If the Pakistani government has been always supportive towards the fundamentalists, but the people in that country have always been very much hospitable and respectful towards the Afghan refugees, which we really should be thankful for that. And our website is RAWA, www.rawa.org. And I really don't want to go on and on, although there might be many issues to talk about, but I know that the time is short. And once again, I thank you very much for your attention and solidarity and support.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on Radio Lava Lamp, streaming out of Osaka, Japan, online at www.radiolavalamp.com. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all, 24 hours a day, listen online at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to FRSC@microradio.net. That's FRSC@microradio.net. Or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or call area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A Infos Radio Project for distribution, and special thanks to Skidmark Bob for editing assistance. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For the Fish and everyone here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.